Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Pharrell with my good friend Tim Smith, longtime legendary New York writer, Daily News, and now the head of PR for Al Haymon. He's enormous in boxing, always was as a writer. That's when I got to know you, covering fights for all the years. I got to ask you, the changing of the guard from you, from Penn to PR. I remember my dad was an anchor man back in the 60s with CBS, and they went on strike, and he went to work for U.S. Steel as a PR man. And he used to always say he regretted not finishing what he started as a broadcaster and getting into the PR business, but he spent 45 years as a PR man and was hugely successful. What was the transition like for you from Penn to PR?
Well, I mean, I got booted out of the newspaper business.
Brutal.
It was brutal. Yeah, we had massive layoffs and cuts and everything.
Still doing it.
And they're still doing it. The industry, the newspaper industry is in terrible
shape. Ruined it.
Yeah, it's in terrible shape. Let's face it, there are only a few newspapers that are hiring journalists now. But the transition for me has been sort of seamless, sort of painless, because I'm basically, even though I'm not writing articles, I'm coming up with ideas, creative ideas. I'm pitching them to other people. And the pain of that is that I'm not involved in the execution of doing it. I'm not involved in the physical, writing the story, doing the interviews and things like that. I still write a ton of press releases, but that's not the same. But, you know, I'm thankful every time I see the paycheck. That's basically the bottom line.
You get disgusted with what you've seen happen to newspapers like I have, because I still get two of them in my driveway. I still love the feel of it, the smell of it. I love reading. I loved the newspaper my whole life. And especially when you live in New York and there's so many great newspapers to get your hands on, does it disgust you what's happened to it?
I think frustrated is more appropriate for me, because I'm a newspaper guy. I got ink running through my blood. I mean, I've always wanted to be in newspapers. And it's just sort of frustrating to see what's happened to the industry and to know that it's never coming back to the day that it was. It's never coming back to Woodward and Bernstein. I mean, it's never coming back to the things that made us interested in reading the sports pages. Red Smith, Dave Anderson, Dick Young. It's never coming
back. Jim Murray.
It's never coming back to those days.
Sad.
And it really is sad. I mean, it's sad. It's tragic what's happened. And you would hope that you would find more people that are willing to invest in the product the way Jeff Bezos is invested in it in Washington. But the guy's a gazillionaire. And, you know, the same thing with the guy who invested in the...
His ex-wife's a gazillionaire now. She's got the money now.
Maybe she can invest in the New York Daily News. Let's call her up.
Or in boxing. If you're a kid, like I went to Ernie Pyle School of Journalism at Indiana University, and I wanted to be a sportscaster and a sports writer. That was it. And great journalism school. You got Northwestern, Missouri, Indiana. There's others. What do you do now if you're a young kid going to college that wants to be a sports writer? How has it changed? And your future is so different now and so narrow compared to what it was back in the day.
Well, I think you just have to try to find a niche. And there are so many different niche things now, you know, with the internet, with Snapchat, with Twitter. You just got to sort of find a niche. People are doing podcasts now. People are doing blogs. So it's more...
You can't be a writer on Twitter. You can be a pain in the ass.
Well, sometimes that's all it takes, though, if you're holding truth.
If you have skill, and like you do as a writer,
you want to do long form.
That's a joke.
You want to do long form things, and that opportunity is just very narrow, because now you have places like The Athletic. They really let their writers express themselves, and they're really a long form kind of place. You got Bleacher.
Have they tried to get you back?
No one.
I miss your columns. I miss your writing. That sucks that you're not, because that's how I fell in love with you, was reading your column. It sucks for me that you don't do it anymore. I mean, it really does. And you know that's true, because I followed you around here for 20 years.
Yeah, no, that's sincere. And I do miss it, but you have to move on. I don't know what young journalists are going to do. I can, in good conscience, tell a young journalist onto this business. You know, my daughter majored in journalism and communications at Rutgers, and she's in PR now.
So what did she say? It was like was it a dead end on every street to try to get into the business? And well, so she went a different avenue?
Her focus was sort of narrow. She wanted to be a magazine writer. She's a terrific writer. But there aren't any opportunities. There are probably fewer opportunities in magazines than there are in newspapers. And she could spend her time being a freelancer. But if you're not established in that industry in terms of having contacts and having written for publications or big-time publications, they're not going to sniff you. They're not going to give you an opportunity to even break the threshold of the door. So, you know, it's very frustrating. And that's why I was saying it's frustrating for me. You know,
I get the Daily News still, and I have no reason to get it because it sucks so bad. Like, I can't tell you what they did to that paper. They destroyed it. They made it a AP rag of just AP story. No offense to the AP, but their sports section's so bunk now. How can they live with themselves that they're trying to fool people into reading it?
Well, it's a corporate decision.
Bad decision.
It's a bad decision for the consumers of journalism and the consumers of sports and, you know, sports news in New York. But from a corporate business standpoint, it's what they wanted to do. They even fired the sports editor. So it's a rudderless sports section now. Have three or four writers that cover everything, which is impossible. So the stuff that they're asking them to cover, they can't cover it well because they have to try to cover so much. And it really is unfair to the writers that are there. You know, I know that they all want to keep their jobs and everything, but they can't do any quality work.
They got rid of Harp, and then I'm friends with old man Madden. He hated doing TV with me, but he found me to be a pain in the ass, which I am. His face would turn purple doing TV with me. He wanted to punch my face in. But I go to this restaurant he used to hang out at. Now he's living in Florida. But they still got him ragging like one day a week on baseball. He's back ragging with him.
Well, I think what they've tried to do there, I think they've tried to maintain some credibility by bringing in some legacy guys to write every now and
then. That's what they're doing.
Every now and then, so they can maintain some credibility.
That's a tease.
It's a bad tease, too.
It is.
It's a horrible tease because you're not going to get those guys' insight on a day-to-day basis, and those guys aren't really around the team. You know, the thing that I liked about the Daily News was all of their reporters were almost like embedded. They were always around the team. They always had good, solid inside information, and they wrote with authority, and they were entertaining writers, and that's what I liked. They had a passion for the sports that they covered. That's what I liked about the Daily News. One of the reasons that I went over to the Daily News as a sports section. I came over from the New York Times, which has never really had a passion for sports and the way that sports is covered, particularly not in New York. But they don't have that anymore. I mean, it's like the company that owns it now, they've ripped the soul out of, to me, the best sports newspaper in the country.
Is no longer even remotely considered good. So tell me, to transition back to the boxing end of it. So your gig now with Heyman, I mean, this guy is a monster in this business. He is huge, and he is making the biggest fights happen. Pacquiao, Broner, here we go. That's the least of them. I mean, this guy has done some huge things. What he's doing with fighters, what he's doing for boxing, to me, it's all good. I think it's great for the sport. Are you feeling the same way about it?
Yeah, he grew up the same way that I grew up, watching fights in the afternoon, watching fights on broadcast television. So, you know, he wants to bring it back and make it one of the legacy sports. He wants to make it like the NFL, like Major League Baseball, you know, like the NBA. Where people are just talking about the sport on a regular basis. Like, you would open up your show talking about the NFL and talking about the playoffs.
I opened with boxing all night, last night and tonight, I can tell you that.
Yeah, but he wants that to be part of the conversation all the time, where we're talking about boxers the same way that we're talking about, you know, NFL players and Major League Baseball players. He wants it to be, again, a fabric of the American sports scene. And, you know, I bought into that vision 4 years ago when I joined him, and I still see that. I mean, with the new deal that we have with Fox, getting
to see that deal with Fox pay-per-view, they've never done one, that they're doing Mikey and Errol, the Garcia-Spence fight in Dallas. I'm going to that. That's the fight of the year, if you ask me. That's delicious. That he got that on Fox, and that he got the NFL, in the middle of NFL games, they're talking, they're showing Mikey, and they're showing Errol, and they're showing boxing in the middle of an NFL broadcast. To me, I almost fell over.
Yeah, and I think that's caught a lot of people by surprise, but it goes to show that other people are buying into his vision, that this can indeed be a sport that you can revive. Because when you think about it, the sport has such a rich history. You know, John L. Sullivan, Jack Johnson, Jack Dempsey, you know, Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, you know, Rocky Marciano. When you start thinking about the legacy of the sport and the tradition of the sport, it's such a rich history. And now you have an opportunity to create today's generation of stars, the next generation of superstars, so that 20, 30, 40 years down the road, people are going to be talking about the Errol Spences, the Mikey Garcias, the Keith Thurmans of the world, the Manny Pacquiao's of the world. They're going to be talking about them like we talk about Ray Leonard and Hearns and Hagler.
Those were the days. Those are the days for me. So someone asked me today, what was my favorite fight? And you know what my favorite fight was? Strangely enough, I was sitting next to, as you know, legend, fur coat, Frank DeFord, pimping the most at Caesar's Palace the night that fan guy crashed into that ring with Bo and Holyfield. I was there, and the minute it happened, I'm sitting next to DeFord, the guy crashes into the ring. I get up, I run backstage, I go on nationwide radio, 250 markets, and telling this crazy story. And then all of a sudden, I see Riddick Bowe's wife collapse, pregnant, and they roll her out on a gurney. And I'm like, Jesus, is this happening? And I'm live on the radio. That was my favorite boxing memory. Though I've been to better fights, I was at the Tyson Holyfield ear bite. I've seen a lot of them, Sugar Ray, Hagler, Hearns. I don't think they make them like they used to. They still make them, good fighters, but not like they used to. But that was the one I remembered the most in my 25 years of covering the sport.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was a crazy night. I think the one for me, the most memorable, and I've had several memorable fights, but I think one of the most memorable fights for me was just the night that Tyson fought Spinks in Atlantic City, because I've never seen a professional athlete just have sheer terror.
Destroyed it.
Yeah, but Spinks was
scared
to death, terrified, and you could see the fear in his face, and I'd never seen that. Like, he was going to an execution, and I've never seen that.
He was at the Wilder Fury thing when they brought out all the old heavyweights. He was chilling the most. He was out there. They rolled him out. And
they had Bo.
And
Big Daddy.
I had Bo on the show, Big Daddy. And they had a bunch of them there.
Lennox Lewis. Ernie Shavers.
Shavers is the one.
Ernie Shavers.
You remember him?
Yeah, I remember
him.
The Acorn.
So what do you think of Pacquiao Broner? I was sitting in the bar with Mafia last night looking at the odds. This is just me. The odds are terrible on this fight as a bettor. They really are. Like, the 5-6 for a decision. I'm not wasting my time standing in that line. But when I saw, believe it or not, 15-1 for a draw, I was thinking, these two could actually go 12 rounds and draw. It could actually happen at 15-1. It's too easy to say decision. I don't think Manny's going to knock that kid out. I think he's a tough kid. I've seen him lose, but he's a tough kid. He'll counter all day with Pacquiao.
Yeah, I think it just depends on where Adrian is mentally. I see it as a 50-50 fight, and I'm not trying to sell the fight.
Me too.
I'm not trying to, you know, get anybody to buy the pay-per-view. I would love for people to buy the pay-per-view, but I see it as a 50-50 fight. I know people think that, you know, Manny's going to steamroll him, but I just go back to when Broner fought Maidana, and Maidana dropped him early and was just like,
I was there,
beating him from pillar to post, and how this guy bit down and came back and, you know, made it a fight. And then he didn't back, and he fought his way back. He didn't win the decision, but he could have easily been knocked out and just given up. But, you know, he's a tough kid. He's got a decent beard, and Manny's going to put pressure on him. So I think Manny's going to make him fight. And I think, and maybe I'm hoping more than thinking intelligently on this, but I'm hoping that he rises to the occasion and gives everybody an entertaining fight.
Will it cost him his career, his behavior in the game? Let's face it. He embarrasses himself every time he walks in a room. Like, he has so much talent, and he's wasted it with all of his BS. Out of the ring, on the streets, in the hood, wherever. He's doing stupid stuff. Do you think he'll ever make it in boxing with the way he's acted?
Well, it's gotten him this far. I mean, he's still is one of the fighters that gets the highest ratings on regular television
that.
When he fights. People follow him on Twitter. They follow him on Instagram. So he's still very popular. I don't know if he will ever conform to our standards of what good behavior is, because conforming to our standards of good behavior hasn't gotten him where he is now.
The other has.
And the other has, and there hasn't been a disincentive for him not to behave the way he is. But I hope that a level of maturity, you know, does take hold, and I hope it takes hold before he gets out of the sport. And I will use Mike Tyson as an example, because if you follow Mike Tyson's early career, you know, I go back to the statement by Larry Holmes that said, before he's 40, they're going to find him dead in an alley.
Right.
And now Tyson's over 50 years old.
Selling weed.
And he's selling weed.
Doing Broadway.
Yeah, doing Broadway. And, you know, so we never thought we would see a mature Mike Tyson. Did it come after his career was over, after he faded? Yeah. Was it too late for him? Yeah. But you know what? In the intervening years, he did his thing, and he still was, you know, still is probably one of the most popular boxers ever.
That 30 for 30 on Buster was pretty cool.
Oh, that was a great documentary. I mean, that was just fantastic. And, you know, I still remember I was working in Cincinnati. I still remember driving up to the airport in Columbus, and they had the welcome home for Buster Douglas. And remember seeing Buster getting off the plane and walking.
I remember the night he fought him. I was in Pittsburgh. It was snowing. We had a blizzard, and I rolled my car down a hill and crashed with my buddy trying to get home to watch the fight. And these people helped us push the car out of the ditch. And in less than 5 minutes before the fight started, we got out, got home, turned the TV on, and the fight started. And then that 8th, 9th, and 10th round were one of the greatest three-round stretches I've ever seen in my life, because I wasn't obviously there. But to see those three rounds was sickening. The beating he put on him, because no one ever thought it could happen. It was crazy.
It was one of the most dramatic moments in all of sports history. Because, again, this guy was an unbelievable underdog, and nobody thought Tyson was could be handled. I mean, he had that cloak of invincibility, like we were just talking about Spinks. Spinks was scared for his life when he walked in that ring. But you know what? When you have a guy that doesn't have anything to lose, and he goes into the ring and he puts it all on the line, this is what you have. And that's the drama that makes boxing sort of different than all others.
Lastly, do you think Mikey can go up two weights and beat Errol Spence, or is it asking too much?
I think it's asking a lot, but again,
it's a tough mother.
I'm not trying to get people to buy a pay-per-view fight or anything like that, but I look at that as a 50-50 fight. Mikey's very skilled, and people sleep on how good he is. And really, if the politics weren't involved, he would probably be number one pound for pound. Because when he left the game, he was like right behind Raul Marquez as number three. Floyd was number one, and Marquez was like number two. And, you know, Mikey was like number three. He was right there pound for pound. And, you know, he came back, and the guy didn't miss a beat. The guy came back and won a title at lightweight. And since then, he's added a title at 140. And, you know, I believe in Mikey.
Me too. I love him.
I mean, Errol's a great boxer. He's probably the best welterweight in the game. But you know what? You can't discount a guy.
He's my favorite fighter. I think he's a badass.
Who has that kind of confidence and self-belief that he can go in there against anybody.
Hey, Smitty, it's always great seeing you. I love you. Congrats on the deal with Heyman. And I know you guys are doing a great job. And Bruce is in it, too, Binkow. You guys are killing it. Keep knocking it out of the park. Great fights. That's all we want. I love you. I'm glad you're doing great.
Thanks for having me on, man, always.
All right, Smitty, Tim Smith with Heyman and PBC, my man on the bench on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.